The Spotlight.
The French presidential election in 2022 is here, and the results so far show a downturn in the participation rate, around 65%, down sharply from the same point back in the year 2017 when elections took place. The obvious question, why do French voters feel that they should not come out and vote like before, especially during uncertain economic times? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at Emmanuel Macron, the current president's five-year report card, and why the contender Marine Le Pen actually has gained in popularity. And we will also take a look at the Muslim vote and why Macron may have lost that demographic. First, let's get an idea about some of the results that have come out from our correspondent, Rami Mazari, who joins us from Paris to tell us about that. Rami, at this point, we know that some initial results have trickled in. Tell us about that and, of course, any developments there that you have.
Very, very close race between incumbent Emmanuel Macron and the 2017 runner-up, Marine Le Pen. The Macron with 28%, Le Pen with 23%. A distant third, well, not a distant third, but Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the leftist, he scored 20%. That's a real failure. It's the exact same score that he got back in 2017. It really shows the failure of the French left to really sort of do anything. You had four out of the top five candidates be far right, and that's the way that it ended. Eric Zemmour, very, very repugnant, convicted racist. And they seemingly handed the campaign agenda to him for months, from from the fall until Ukraine. It was all the disgusting Islamophobia and xenophobia coming out of his mouth, and everybody just sort of following him in the mainstream media. And that's this explains why there was such high abstention. People don't really care about Islamophobia. It's not new here in France. It's not 2007. Running fourth was Valérie Pécresse, the Sarkozy's candidate. But she didn't even get the endorsement of Sarkozy. I won't go on and on. I will note that Jean Lassalle got 3%. He is the only person who wore a yellow vest in the French Parliament. They immediately suspended Parliament, and they fined him €1,500. Good to see him getting 3%. And then at the bottom, I'll point out, the Socialist Party is totally smashed. She got just 2%, and then the two communist parties, they got less than 1% each. They are both Trotskyists, meaning that they disavow the Soviet Union and Cuba and basically every sort of working, and China, and any sort of working socialist state. What they have already pivoted to, we have heard it behind me. We're supposed to all get behind, together, Macron to fight Marine Le Pen. The problem is that it's 2022. We've seen Macron's record. He legalized the state of emergency, which targeted Muslims, hurt them the most. He passed the anti-separatist law, which tried to get minors to not wear the hijab. He failed there, but he succeeded in neutering the rights of many other Muslim rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of religious worship, for various political freedoms. And I just, I think it's going to really come down to now with what's going on now. It's not Islamophobia. This is not 2017. We have the, Trump president. Marine Le Pen is really not so shocking. And now, most of all, Macron was elected in 2017 to sweep out the mainstream. He is the mainstream. And he was elected because the mainstream parties were so corrupt. He set the record for ministers who had to quit for corruption just only 2.5 years into his term. So how are voters going to view him? There's a very, very, very interesting poll set just this week. 7 out of 10 French people want Macron to leave office. So that's really certainly very, very telling. The fact that we are at a dead heat now really should force us to look over at Hungary, where Marine Le Pen's counterpart, her right nationalist counterpart, he had very, very close polls, and then he had a very, 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 very large victory. I think personally we are headed in that same direction. Why? Because it's not 2017. People aren't so scared of Marine Le Pen, and especially Muslims know. We all know that Emmanuel Macron is an Islamophobe. He's not a centrist. He's had 5 years. I've already what he got away with in terms of Muslim oppression and also in terms of the oppression of the yellow vests,
right.
Marine Le Pen would have never, ever really gotten away with. So it's going to come down to pocketbooks, and that's Ukraine. I think many people are going to say that Marine Le Pen cares more about France, Macron cares more about the U.S. and Brussels, and I think we really could be headed towards a Marine Le Pen victory, but we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you so much for that. Ramin Mazari there from Paris. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist, joins us from Normandy. Also joining us, Arnold August, an author and journalist who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Jeff Brown, let me first start with you. So we're looking at a turnout that's 4 percentage points lower than at the same stage that occurred back in 2017. At the same time, based on their initial results, Macron seen a 29.5%, Le Pen 23.5%. Your initial reaction to that?
Well, this is exactly what happened in 2017, and my wife and I voted in that election, and we voted in the election today. And the problem is that the press is totally controlled by the elites, and what's going to happen now in round two is that they will totally demonize Le Pen and call her a fascist, radical, racist, extremist, to push the people towards Macron. And in 2017, and before the first round, they made her look like she was an angel and a princess and a wonderful lady. And no, she's not that bad. And she's not that radical, because they did not want Mélenchon to get into the final round, because I think he's the only candidate that might have any chance of beating Macron. So here we are again, the left with seven parties, all splintered. If all of those parties had backed Mélenchon, Mélenchon would be going against Macron in the second round.
I think
he could beat him.
Why do you think they didn't? At this point, do we have any who have endorsed either?
Well, the left in France has always been highly splintered. You've got communists and Workers' Party, and then the socialists, ecologists. Two or three different communist parties, and there's a lot of infighting, a lot of jealousy, a lot of the left here has been talking forever about a unified left, and the last time that happened, Mitterrand got elected, and that has not happened since.
Okay, Arnold August, looking over here. Moving to the second round with obviously Macron and Le Pen, if you haven't heard. Let's break this down a little bit and first talk about whichever you like. Let's pick Le Pen. What do you think of Le Pen? She's being described, as our guest there said back in 2017, of being an extremist and so forth and so on, but now she has portrayed and been successful in portraying herself as somewhat more moderate. And that obviously was to allay any concerns that the voters may have. Do you agree with that? What are your views on Le Pen?
Well, of course, yeah, she is definitely, and this is always the case in these type of elections, such as in France or United States or Canada, people on the right, try to shift change their appearance to be more moderate in order to try to get some more votes. But one thing is very interesting talking about trying to be more moderate is that she actually visited Moscow, I think, in 2017, and she came back saying that she had a high regard for President Putin. Of course, now Macron is fighting against that, saying showing pictures of her in Moscow and trying to denigrate her with regards to the international affairs of being soft on Russia. So, you know, it's a shift. It's a mixed ground. I mean, there's no clear way that one could describe Le Pen at this time, because everything is shifting according to circumstances, with the one and only goal trying to get votes.
When we take a look at the way that you said, Jeff Brown, that the media controls the way that these contenders and the incumbent is portrayed, perhaps showing the pluses and minuses, what is the real story, do you think? For example, we had our correspondent when he spoke to us saying that 7 out of 10 voters actually support Macron, but we're not seeing that at the polls. Or support Le Pen? Is that how? What is the deal? I mean, who has more popularity here?
Before every election, everyone who's registered to vote here receives a packet of information with the platform for all, and there were 12 candidates, mind you, which is too many. That's part of the problem with the French electoral system. And when you read Le Pen's platform, I don't think she's radical at all. She is definitely much more liberal than any Republican.
Give us one point that stands out.
Well, one point, she has a very socialist-minded, in terms of the 99% medical care, taking care of the people, providing, public services, et cetera. In fact, her economic advisor came from the Socialist Party. The only thing that she gets demonized here for is because she's the daughter of Mr. Le Pen, who was overtly racist. Le Pen is just against immigration, but that is not an unpopular platform around the world. And so, I mean, to be honest with you, other than the fact that she's against immigration, she's as far as I'm concerned, she's as much on the left as some of the other left-wing candidates. So the problem is the press is going to absolutely push her, or they're going to destroy her in the next 2 weeks, because we have to wait 2 weeks for the second round on the 24th. They will destroy her, the other thing is Macron is, he's not middle of the road. He's a neoliberal right winger. He's a very neoliberal World Economic Forum Council on Foreign Relations. He is more right wing than Le Pen, but the press will make sure that that's not how it's portrayed. And that's the big problem here is that the mass media, what I call the big lie propaganda machine, is what it decides who gets elected, unfortunately.
So let's put that into perspective, if we can, or if you can, Arnold August. We know that Marine Le Pen, one of the platforms that she ran on is the fact that she wants to somehow focus on the cost of living crisis and be able to tame that. Of course, we know that that's a huge problem for the French. Now, Macron, on the other hand, I'm not too sure how well he has done. They're touting a 7% GDP growth, but then when you take a look at the real figures, you can see that the deficit is still high. You're having a manufacturer base in France that's gone out of business. They're not doing that well. And also, we're looking at one of the worst inflations when it comes to energy. So who stands better? Who can fare better under those circumstances, you think?
Well, I think that, describing these specific programs of these two candidates, I don't think that it has very much currency or very much legitimacy amongst the population. Here in Montreal, there's a large number of French citizens, of course, who are voting today. And speaking briefly with them over the last few days, their frustration is, how come? I mean, the previous speaker talked about the role of the media. It's very important. And I think the most important feature of the media in these elections is they focus solely on Le Pen and Macron, as if these are the only two candidates that count, that have a chance of winning. So it's like a vicious circle. They avoid talking about Mélenchon, and they concentrate on the other two, making it like a sure bet that there's no chance for Mélenchon can win, and one only the other two can win. Now, as far as I know, the Mélenchon has a 11% rating amongst the voters. In other words, it's quite important. And I, you know, speaking to my friends here in Montreal who are voting, they're very disappointed that this time the Communist Party of France did not sit it out as they did previously and openly support Mélenchon. And if they would have done that, I think we would be in a different situation now, far more solid, with chances very much improved for Mélenchon to actually get into that second round. And I think that if one look at his general program internationally and nationally, it is very good. It's a solid left-wing program. There's no real reason why the Communist Party of France did not drop their own, you know, sectarian, if I may use the word, interests and goals, and in support, put all their backing in support of Mélenchon. He's a very dynamic person. And the fact that the media are just ignoring him, we may be in for some kind of a surprise, because the voter turnout is so low. It is mainly because people have no confidence in the two main candidates and their programs, which more often than not seem to be just, well, platitudes to try to get votes. Is very obvious. And we could actually have a surprise this Sunday with regards to Mélenchon. Let us see.
Well, we need to talk about the economy a little bit more here, Jeff Brown. And I'm looking at comments made back in 2017, because I had a record of that. And one of them said, you can't make it to the end of the month. This is just one of the French protesters, which we'll talk about where he was protesting. You can't make it to the end of the month, even with two salaries. Looking at some of the comments now made by some of the French, they're still struggling to make ends meet. So what has Macron done? And we're looking again at the voter focus, which is during this post, if I can call it that, post-COVID era, whether the French government under Macron can handle what's coming its way, as opposed to Le Pen.
Well, since 2017, Macron, you have to understand that Macron is a neoliberal Trojan horse. He is a Rothschild regent. He was cultivated by the Rothschild family, Goldman Sachs. He is an elitist and has absolutely no concern whatsoever for the common man. In fact, he's going to give his speech tonight at Versailles, you know, where Louis the 14th was, you know. But the problem is that, I mean, everything has gone south since the European Treaty in 2007. Salaries are going nowhere. Inflation's going up. Social services for the 99% are being slashed. Since Macron got elected in 2017, just as just one example, 17,000 hospital beds have been shut down. Taxes have been raised on the 99%. Taxes have been lowered on the 1%. Austerity has been increased on the 99%. Austerity doesn't exist for the 1%. That's why the yellow vests have been out there for the last 3 years, and Rahman Mazahiri has done a brilliant job. They express the frustration, and we live here. A year ago, we bought 1,000 liters of heating oil for 777 euros. We just paid 1,966 euros for that same 1,000 liters of heating oil. So it's a disaster. I mean, he is a disaster, but he is a disaster for the 99%. He is a dream come true for Washington, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum, the CIA. He is their man. And right. But you turn on the French television, and you don't see this, you don't hear it. The yellow vests are invisible. That guy you quoted never sees the light of day except on press TV and other alternative websites. So it is just propaganda, 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 and the big lie propaganda machine makes sure that the 1% candidate gets in, and that's happened with Sarkozy and Hollande, and now with Macron, and he will get in for the second in the second round.
Well, Arnold August, how can that be turned around? A and B, do you think the French will be able to see through that, based on what our guest there from Normandy said? Because obviously, inflation, whether it's energy, food prices, basic goods, is going through the roof in many cases.
Well, I have to be an optimistic guy this morning. And, you know, France has its revolutionary traditions going back several centuries. And they have stood up to a lot of the neoliberal policies that have been going on in France over the last few years. I have hope that Mélenchon will, after all, be able to get into the second round. That's what I'm hoping for. And the people I'm speaking here in Montreal are hoping for that as well. But the basic thing, the headlines are the voter turnout is down. One. Why? They don't say so. But the voter turnout is down because all the emphasis are on those two, you know, one, as the previous speaker said, the two 1% candidates who are not like the vast majority. So will their political consciousness be sharp enough, rebellious enough to make a break from the status quo, focus only on those two 1% candidates, and make a move to try to get Mélenchon into the second round, which I still think is possible.
I'm going to now end it with a quote. I'm stuck between Le Pen and Macron. I'm going to go with Le Pen. If I can ask you, Jeff Brown, this is what she has said in her campaign trail. The presidential election day is a very important day because, considering the situation of the country and the world, it will determine the course of not only the next 5 years, but also possibly the next 50 years. Do you agree with her?
It's maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but yeah, this is an important time for France and an important election. She lost 34% to 66% in 2017, and my wife and I voted for her in the second round because we knew that Macron was a train wreck to kill the working people in the 99%. I think Macron is still going to win, but the margin will be less. But he will, unfortunately, sadly, is still going to win.
Okay, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you, Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist from Normandy. Arnold August, a pleasure, author and journalist there from Montreal. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapley, it's goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ألم تر إلى ربك كيف مد الظل ولو شاء لجعله ساكنا ثم جعلنا الشمس عليه دليلا
Have you not considered your Lord, how he extends the shadow, and if he willed, he could have made it stationary? Then we made the sun for it an indication.
Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 45th verse of the chapter. أَلَمْ تَرَ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَيْفَ مَدَّ الظِّلِّ وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَجَعْلَهُ سَاكِنًا ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَا الشَّمْسَ عَلَيْهِ دَلِيلًا Have you not seen the might of your Lord, how he extends the shadow? And if he had pleased, he would certainly have made it stationary. Then we have made the sun an indication of it. Also, the 46th verse says, ثُمَّ قَبَضْنَاهُ إِلَيْنَا قَبْضًا يَسِيرًا Then we draw it in towards ourselves by an easy contraction. Brothers and sisters, from this part of the chapter, we actually are facing some of the verses that are showing us the guidance that we can get from the system and the working of the nature by looking at it and by pondering on it. And the best way of knowing Allah for all is to ponder the phenomena of existence. These are some creatures that are all created according to a divine wisdom. The rotation of the earth around itself, the rotation of the earth around the sun, they are not accidental. They are wisely and prudently. In this regard, Imam Baqir alayhi salam has said, the purpose of the extension of shadow in the verse is the shade that is between the dawn and rising of sun. So when the verse says, أَلَمْ تَرَ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَيْفَ مَدَّ الظِّلِ Have you not seen your Lord, how he extends the shadow? This might be the exact translation of it. Although some count the shade as the shade of night or afternoon, but with regard to the next sentence, which says, ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَا الشَّمْسَ عَلَيْهِ دَلِيلًا Then we have made the sun an indication of it, what Imam says seems to be more acceptable.
مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Anyway, these two noble verses, I mean the 45th and 46th one, they are mentioning some of the main parts of divine blessings as the secrets of monotheism, as the paths to knowledge of Allah. And it seems deliberating on these affairs helps us to be more familiar with our Creator and somehow move faster toward Him. So at first it says, أَلَمْ تَرَ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَيْفَ مَدَّ الظِّلْ. Have you not seen your Lord how He extends the shadow? وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَجَعَلَهُ سَاكِنًا. And if He had pleased, He would certainly have made it stationary. ثُمَّ جَعَلَّ الشَّمْسَ عَلَيْهِ دَلِيلًا. Then we have made the sun an indication of it. Certainly, this part of the verse refers to the importance of blessing of vast and moving shades. These shades, as the Holy Quran says, they do not stay in one place. They're always and constantly moving. They're changing. In this regard, commentators have got various opinions about the purpose of shade, or which shade is meant by this verse. Some, of course, believe as what the Imam has said, that is, the shade between the dawn and rising of the sun. Some say that this spread and vast shade that this verse is discussing is the one which covers the earth between the dawn and the rising of the sun, which is the most pleasant shade and hours of the day. This pale shading begins from the dawn and at the rising of the sun, then sun's brightness somehow replaces it. Some have said that this shade is the shade of night that begins with the evening and ends with the rising of the sun. Because we know that night is in fact the shade of the hemisphere of the earth that is in front of the sun. And this shade is conical that expands in space in opposite side. That conical shade always moves. It ends in an area with the rising of the sun and it begins in another area again. Some others have also said that the purpose of the shade is the shade of objects that forms in afternoon and it gradually expands, like everything that we see in the afternoon. Anyway, if there were not the next sentences, we would understand an extensive meaning from this sentence. It could include all the shades, But there are other indications that we will discuss in the next episode, God willing, that shows that the first meaning and commentary is more popular, and it somehow conforms with the rest of the verse. We will, God willing, talk about that later on. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
France is gearing up to start a presidential election which has rapidly gone from a certain win for Emmanuel Macron to a dead heat. New polls show that in a hypothetical second-round matchup with the far-right's Marine Le Pen, the incumbent would lose 51-49%. These polls accurately predicted Macron's 66-34% defeat of Le Pen in 2017. First-round polls show that Macron and Le Pen should advance, with Le Pen easily outdistancing the third-place candidate, leftist Jean-Luc Mélenchon. With his once comfortable lead evaporated, Macron admitted he regrets not declaring his candidacy until March 3rd, not holding his first campaign event until this week, and being overly preoccupied with the unrest in Ukraine. European markets are now panicking over a Le Pen victory, and many pundits are now warning of Le Pen's effects on France's Muslim community. That may be a hard sell, as for months the media and all candidates except Mélenchon engaged in months of unprecedented xenophobia and Islamophobia.
The mainstream media is trying to portray Macron as a centrist, despite the unprecedented closure of Muslim NGOs and mosques, the brutal repression of the Yellow Vests, and an authoritarian style of governance which has benefited the wealthy.
Emmanuel Macron named a party after himself. He has his own personality cult. And when you listen to him, Macron doesn't have a vision of the future. I'm not sure that he has a vision of a France of the past. He is simply a new persona, very much of a technocrat. He's a banker. is a technician, is a bureaucrat. He knows how to solve some issues. He comes from a world which is much more international.
Another new poll has also caused shockwaves. 7 out of 10 French people want Macron to leave office. That indicates that Macron has not been able to grow his core electorate from the roughly 25% which got him elected. In 2017, his voters said the primary reason he was elected was to sweep out the two mainstream parties. The secondary reason was to block Marine Le Pen, with his personality and policies only running third. Highly accurate snapshot results of the first round will be released at 1800 Greenwich Mean Time on April 10th. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iran's nuclear energy program has redefined the country's domestic and foreign policies since the country indigenized the industry. Every year on April 9th, Iran showcases the latest nuclear achievements to mark National Nuclear Technology Day. With President Ebrahim Raisi in attendance, the ceremony this year saw the unveiling of 9 new products out of a total of 77 pieces of nuclear-related equipment produced recently. The president boasted that Iran's nuclear advances were made while the country was under Western pressure.
They didn't want us to have our own domestic nuclear industry. They tried their best to stop us. They assassinated our nuclear scientists, they imposed sanctions, and even targeted our nuclear facilities with explosions. But here we are treading our path toward greater success in the nuclear industry.
Today, we have extended our nuclear know-how to an extent that we can use it in a range of industries such as agriculture and health, such as radio medicine. We will generate 10,000 megawatts of nuclear-powered electricity and are planning to build an entirely domestic 360-megawatt nuclear power plant.
The event comes as Iran and the world powers are wrapping up talks over the revival of the 2015 deal, which promised Tehran sanctions relief in return for curbs on its nuclear program. The accord has faced trouble since the U.S. unilaterally left it in 2018 and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. That prompted Iran and other signatories to the accord to launch the Vienna talks to fix the ailing deal.
You know, we have already finished the discussions and negotiation there. As you have heard from our foreign minister, it is time for decision. They have to make difficult decision. That depends, of course, to them to decide if really they want to come back to the deal. This is the Americans that they have to decide. Of course, we are working in an organization dealing with technical issues, not with political issues. But we are looking forward to see that if there is a deal there, then we will implement the deal based on our obligations.
Iran designated April 9th as the Nuclear Technology Day back in 2006, when the country enriched uranium on an industrial scale for the first time. Since then, the country has seen a steady progress in the sector, from building nuclear power plants to centrifuges and radiopharmaceuticals. So Nuclear Technology Day is seen as an occasion for the country to reaffirm its right to a peaceful nuclear energy program.
Sanctions have been haunting Iran's nuclear program since the country indigenized the key sector. Tehran calls the sanctions illegal and unfair, for it has insisted before the conclusion of the 2015 deal, up until now when the Vienna talks are underway, that weapons of mass destruction have no place on the Islamic Republic's agenda, and that its nuclear program is totally civilian. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
On Friday, tens of thousands of nurses and non-medical health professionals walked off their job and staged a nationwide strike demanding improved pay and better nurse-to-patient ratios. The industrial action had been called by a number of healthcare unions in response to the government's inaction that had followed another strike called in January. Italy's nurses had been celebrated as heroes for treating desperately ill coronavirus patients, often with little equipment and knowledge of the illness. However, today they feel forgotten. About 450,000 nurses are currently employed in Italy, a country with a population of about 60 million people. According to a recent OECD report, the average gross annual salary for nurses is among the lowest in Europe, while the ratio between nurses and the population is 6 per 1,000 inhabitants, against 18 in Switzerland and Norway, 13 in Germany, and 11 in France.
The pandemic has further shown that a shortage of nurses is greatly affecting Italy's healthcare system. Nurses are exhausted today. They had to go through insurmountable challenges during the COVID crisis, including the lack of appropriate gear, knowledge, and the high number of patients. Also, some mismanagement on the part of the hospital administrations made things harder. In some regions where hospitals are run mostly by private companies, the healthcare system has collapsed catastrophically because of the COVID.
Privatized and commercialized, Italy's healthcare system has been thrown upside down over the past 20 years, a system in which private and public clinics compete for taxpayers' money came into play in 1997 when Rome opted to decentralize the Italian healthcare system and give more autonomy to regional governments. Lombardy is one of the Italian regions where the healthcare private sector is largely supported by public funding. It was also one of the worst hit regions in Europe by COVID-19 and the epicenter at the beginning of the European outbreak. Experts believe that Lombardy's fragmented healthcare system snarled the lines of command across the region, throwing hospitals into chaos. That caused the deaths of thousands of people during the first wave of COVID in Italy. Max Civili, Rome.
As voters go to the first round presidential polls this weekend, many French Muslims no longer see Emmanuel Macron as the centrist which he claimed to be in 2017. If Nicolas Sarkozy introduced Islamophobia and François Hollande made it acceptable to the mainstream, Macron's term institutionalized Islamophobia. Macron immediately took Hollande's multi-year state of emergency and legalized it, with Muslims the clear targets and practically the only victims. His so-called anti-separatist law of 2021 tried to ban the hijab for minors and clearly violated constitutional protections for the freedom of association, worship, and politics. It was so heavy-handed, even the United Nations and English-language media widely criticized it.
Emmanuel Macron lance son projet sur le séparatisme.
When Macron launched his anti-separatism law, which hurt Muslims so badly, it was a clear bid to join the far right. We saw that he was using their same ideas and preferred methods, and that he was doing it in broad daylight.
In the months preceding the election, nearly 100 mosques have been raided, with at least 24 shut down so far. Top Muslim NGOs and local community centers have also been exiled or closed. A new report revealed that these closures were based merely on secretive evidence, which is to say no evidence was ever produced in court.
Sur la radicalisation, on a entendu de tout et n'importe quoi.
His government has produced so much nonsense, like when they said having a beard was a sign of being a radical Muslim or taking Ramadan seriously. His politics are clearly identity politics, and that's a real danger. His objective is to have a seat at the table with the other far-right politicians.
Not apologizing for massacres during the war against Algerian independence, keeping the Arab Nelson Mandela, Georges Ibrahim Abdullah, in prison, enacting legislation which falsely equates anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, gutting social services and help for poor, largely immigrant areas. Many Muslims say they are prepared to vote against Macron in the second round, whomever the candidate. In 2012, 93% of over 2 million Muslim voters picked Hollande over Sarkozy, providing the decisive margin in an extremely tight contest. In 2022, Muslims may play a similar role of kingmaker, but it's still not sure which side they will pick. Ramin Mazaheri, Paris.
After an hours-long manhunt throughout Tel Aviv, Israeli forces clashed with Raad Hazem and killed him in Yaffa. 28-year-old Raad Hazem from Jenin refugee camp in the north of the occupied West Bank was the Palestinian man who opened fire in Dizengoff shopping street in central Tel Aviv Thursday night, killing two Israelis and wounding nine others. The Palestinian resistance groups praised the operation, describing it as heroic. Hamas resistance groups said it proves resistance is continuing and escalating, while the Islamic Jihad said the operation confirmed how fragile the Israeli regime is.
The assassination of any Palestinian, Tel Aviv's crimes, and aggression on Al-Aqsa Mosque is responded by more heroic operations, so it's a natural and legitimate response. Israel must expect that any future steps or crimes would definitely drag such reactions.
Following the operation, more than 1,000 police officers joined a manhunt, while the Israeli settlers were ordered to get off the streets and remain at home. Experts say the operation that was the latest string of deadly operations across the occupied territories and the fourth in 2.5 weeks had confused the Israeli regime and proved its weakness.
This operation in particular has really shocked the Israeli society, and the Israeli regime is broken on all levels, even the security level, because they deal with the Palestinian as a security problem and not people having political and historic rights. This operation is telling them that Palestinians exist as real owners and they have a right in these lands.
Meanwhile, Israeli military has declared its forces will be on high alert in Al-Quds for the first Friday prayers of the holy month of Ramadan. The Israeli police bolstered their forces in Al-Quds, and more troops have stationed on the numerous checkpoints in the occupied West Bank, imposing more strict measures against the Palestinians. Palestinians say the Israeli military thought its crackdown and aggression following the March 22nd operation that claimed four Israeli lives led to a state of calm in the occupied territories. However, Raad Hazem's Thursday attack that killed two more Israelis reminded the regime that the entire Palestinian lands are occupied and that the resistance continues. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
One of the men is Britain's monarch in waiting. The other is one of the UK's most prolific paedophiles and abusers, a public figure who used his influence to groom an attack on suspecting victims. Now in a series of bombshell revelations being made in a new Netflix series, the handwritten correspondence between 1986 to 2006 shows Prince Charles asking the late Saville for tips in repairing the reputation of the royals. Experts argue that the prince was duped like so many others, but even without the benefit of hindsight, Charles's association with Saville seems surprising.
It's remarkable that they didn't call upon the services of a professional PR company and they sought the services of Jimmy Savile. It just goes to show the lack of judgment and the lack of understanding of the potential for this kind of blowback when they cavort with these celebrities not knowing anything about their background or not even trying to look into their background before they do so. We are talking about the royal family after all, aren't we?
These new revelations, albeit of a past association, adds to the woes of an institution already struggling with the fallout from the Meghan Markle-Prince Harry union, Prince Andrew reaching a multi-million pound settlement for allegations he had sex with an underage girl, and outstanding accusations that Prince Charles's former associate exchanged financial inducements for helping a Saudi millionaire with his British papers.
This new revelation is something the royal family could well do without at a time when the House of Windsor is scrambling to repair its image and reputation after a series of very public missteps. The association between one of the most prolific abusers in history and the heir to the throne is a serious blow.
As Queen Elizabeth scales back on her public duties, Prince Charles must now try and convince an uncertain public the crown will be safe in his hands. On this evidence, at least, the jury is out. Amina Taylor, London.
Just days after a UN-backed truce came into force in Yemen, fears have risen over the implementation of the agreement, with key promises regarding commercial flights being allowed to enter Sana'a's international airport failing to materialize so far. At the time of the UN announcement, senior Yemeni officials warned onlookers to remain cautious about raising their hopes prematurely. Despite the warning, many Yemenis have already become excited for an end to the war.
The truce is wonderful for us and the region in general, a great thing, and we hope that the truce will last not only for 2 months, but rather permanently, because the people are tired and they have suffered a lot.
Yemenis have faced their fair share of disappointment over the years in regards to peace efforts. Multiple nationwide ceasefires have all failed, and the 2018 peace talks hosted by Sweden also failed to produce an end to the conflict. However, experts still believe the flights will begin soon.
The truce is holding very well. Reports of violations do not amount to breaking the truce. It's the usual standard violations that take place in similar situations. The Saudis have been trying to get out of this quagmire for a long time. And the big major conference in Riyadh is their way to initiate their exit out of the Yemen conflict. So I'm very hopeful that this will lead to some major break in the Yemeni conflict.
This truce, which the United Nations is already celebrating, could turn into a curse rather than a blessing for millions of Yemenis if key pledges regarding the siege are not upheld. In particular, so many will be hoping that they can finally get into Yemen to visit their besieged loved ones. If that turns out not to be the case, then it would be another additional heartbreak on top of the many already broken hearts which have been caused by this devastating conflict. Robert Carter, London.
A Turkish court has suspended Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi's trial in absentia of 26 Saudi nationalists accused of murdering the man inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. The Turkish justice minister said a red notice had been issued for 26 suspects. 20 of them were asked to be extradited to Turkey. However, the court's request was rejected, and Saudi Arabia demanded the case be transferred to Riyadh.
A red notice was issued for 26 suspects, and 20 of them were asked to be extradited to Turkey. But all our requests were rejected. Saudi Arabia later demanded the transfer of this case. Now the government recommended the court to close the trial in absentia and transfer the case to Saudi Arabia. However, the trial would continue in Saudi Arabia, and Turkey will wait to see convictions and sentences before dropping its own case.
The case will be transferred to Saudi Arabia. However, it is seen by many as if it will be closed. Saudi officials say the case is already closed and those involved were convicted. Khashoggi's fiancée Hatice Cenkiz, however, said she would appeal the decision, speaking to reporters in front of the courthouse.
Turkey is not ruled by a family like in Saudi Arabia. We have a justice system that addresses citizens' grievances. We will appeal the decision in line with our legal system.
Many believe the change in Turkey's stance is due to Ankara's bid to restore its relations with countries in the region.
After 4 years of not reaching its purpose and due to the suspects not being extradited to Turkey, to stand in front of the judge, it seems appropriate for Turkey to transfer the case to Saudi Arabia. However, the timing here serves Turkey for sure. It comes ahead of an expected visit by Turkish president to the kingdom, and as Turkey is restoring its relations with countries in the region such as United Arab Emirates and Israel.
Turkish officials had previously said that Khashoggi, who is a known critic of MBS, was killed and dismembered inside the Saudi consulate in an operation approved by highest levels in the kingdom. Khashoggi's trial intensified a friction between Ankara and Riyadh, but it seems President Erdogan is looking for a warm welcome during his upcoming visit to the kingdom. Rahshan Saglam, Istanbul.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. Fasting is among the worships which God had prescribed in the religions before Islam. He says in Ayah 183 of Surah Baqarah that fasting has been prescribed for Muslims as it had been prescribed for those before. Fasting in general means abstaining from eating and drinking. It is a kind of austerity for body in order for spirit to grow and reach perfection. If you remember, we discussed fasting among Jews. And today, we are going to touch upon fasting among Christians. Stay tuned, please.